Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast Extras. In this episode, we talk about upgrades that we're making to our podcast setup, and I build my own custom Cyberdeck. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McCain. Darren and I talk a lot about the system builds that we put together for gaming, or what I might put together for a LAN party or for overclocking on the bench or even just reviews.
Yeah, just in general, enthusiast builds, I think.
But there is other computers that we have. Like, for instance, my main desktop. You know, it's an X99. I talked about it in the main show. It's been around for a long time. And I finally got around to buying new components so that I could upgrade that.
Ooh, we'll talk about that build soon, maybe next month.
Yeah, hopefully. But there's another build that is actually more key to running Hardware Asylum than my main desktop build. And that's the one that we use for recording the podcast.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, we've had this machine for a while, though. Although we started out, I think, on the Asus Slate, if you go way back in the Wayback Machine.
Yeah, so... You know, and just to do a little bit of, well, history, because we're nostalgic, right? The Asus Slate I picked because it was small and it had touch interface and it was kind of my laptop at the time. And when we were planning out how to record, you know, we had the Blue Yeti that was in front of us, which is a great microphone.
We might have started out with the Ball before the Yeti even.
No, you wanted me to get the Snowball. Uh-huh. But I was like, nah.
We sprung for the Yeti.
This one's better.
Who knew this was going to last for, what, almost 15 years now?
Oh, yeah, I know. Crazy. Well, anyhow. And so we're out in building two, which is my garage. And I kind of created these old panels to try to knock down echoes. But the idea was that with the Asus Slate, everything was right in front of us. So I didn't have to put together a big tower build and then run cables over, and then, you know, back then fans were loud and we wanted to try to keep everything quiet.
And the appeal of the touch screen, oh man, so strong. It's kind of sad that that hasn't been so dominant as we expected.
Moving forward, so in 2013, I decided to treat the podcast to some new recording gear, and I have an article on Hardware Asylum that talks about the upgrade, and that's when we moved to the Rode Procaster microphones, dynamic mics, and sadly, we're still using them.
They are great, though.
And that goes into a Focusrite audio interface.
This is not our first Focusrite, though.
No, this is the second one. And that goes a USB connection into a PC. I struggled to find when I put this PC together, but looking on the archives on, you know, for the podcast that were on this machine, it looks like it was 11/2016.
Wow. Okay.
So 9 years ago, as of this recording, I put together a, basically it was extra review gear and I just kind of put it all together. It was a 4770K.
Now this is one of our small form factor builds too, which we don't do as many of as we would like. I know we're both big fans, but.
Yeah. Well, and I wanted to put together something small. It needed to go in flavor of the Slate, but I knew that I needed more power. So I found the smallest industrial case I could. This is an Inwin chassis. Small supports a mini ITX form factor motherboard, and it has spots for a half-height expansion card. Now in there, I put in a capture card because what I wanted to do was be able to use it in the garage as the garage PC so that I could capture overclocking demonstrations, gaming, streaming, be able to broadcast to Twitch, collect videos. We've done a couple of video podcasts on this machine where you brought over your PC and then routed the video through there and then recorded it and sometimes broadcasted it to Twitch and then had that instead of a half-hour episode, we had a three-hour episode, which that was fun, but we get derailed too often anyway.
We should still do more of those. That's a lot of fun and it's a little bit off the beaten path, but I get the point. We've created sort of a small form factor jack of all trades that has been with us for, that was almost two-thirds the time we've been doing this. I feel like it's interesting to me because we talk so much about the length of time that you should have a PC, particularly as an enthusiast. Mm-hmm. And in the gaming standpoint, I mean, in general, we've said 5 years for a long time. And I still feel like that's pretty accurate. If you buy a mid to high end setup, you're going to be able to get 3 years easy, 5 years stretch. I think that's pretty accurate. So we're talking a lot longer than that for this PC.
Yeah. And it's done everything I've asked it to. So the times that I was broadcasting to Twitch and recording a video at the same time, it was saved to a rotational hard drive as compressed video. And it didn't drop any frames when I was broadcasting to Twitch. It was pretty awesome. I was able to hook up my retro PC through the Focusrite to get audio, video into a converter that went into the capture card, and all of that going into OBS so that I could rebroadcast it. And it was a champ the entire time. Now, while it was a champ, it didn't mean it wasn't stressed.
Right. And it is starting to show its age a little bit. It takes a little longer to compress things.
Well, I think that might be our perception because our main machines are so much faster than this particular machine.
Fair point.
So, long story short.
It's time.
And in the flavor of the original build, I am using X-Review hardware. And I have it all the way over here.
And it looks like we're staying with small form factor.
We are. Well, we're going to say keep the same case.
Excellent.
So I am pulling down the ROG Strix B660. This was the first LGA 1700 motherboard that I ever reviewed.
So I'm looking at it. It's in my hand.
Yeah.
This is a sexy little board here. Game on, it says right on it.
Since it's an LGA 1700, you can use one of three different kinds of processors in it. You can use the 12 series, the 13 series, or the 14 series.
Okay.
And I have a processor from each one of those batches. Now, the processor I bought when I got this board was the 12700K. And that's actually a CPU that I still use for AIO and heatsink tests, just because it seems to be more accurate than some of the other ones. And I have a 14900K that I use for motherboard reviews, but since those boards have kind of aged out, it's kind of be set aside.
Right.
But I have the 13900K, which on paper is virtually identical to the 14900.
Yeah, I like it. Now, if I'm not mistaken, the difference was something about the onboard video, right?
No, it was literally like 200 megahertz.
Oh, gosh.
Well, everything else was basically the same, which I didn't realize that until I started looking into it. And it's like, well, what's the difference here? And it's like, oh, it's basically the same processor. That's dumb. The memory controller did change a little bit, though, too.
Well, yeah, but that's to be expected each generation.
Mm-hmm. So this board, Mini ITX, I'm putting some Lexar DDR5 on there. In the current podcast machine, we have Corsair Dominators because, you know, why not? But with DDR5, I have stacks of them that have come in. And it's like, well, I'll keep the RGB ones for flashy builds and I'll just put these are the Thors, I think. But they have like some cool decorations on the heat spreader. I'll put a link to the review down below. But they aren't RGB. It's 32 gigabytes. It's not terribly fast. But this is supposed to be a workhorse machine. It's not a speed demon. So,
well, very respectable. It's interesting, too, because you've got kind of a gold and silver theme going on here with the black base PCB. Mm-hmm. And then the trims in silver and then the memory in gold. So it's kind of rich looking. Say it's sad that it's not a window case.
Oh, yeah, it's true. So with this particular build, I'm also going to be going NVMe. So on the current podcast machine, it's SATA. So we got a SATA SSD and a SATA rotational drive, but I have quite a few NVMe drives. So we're just going to put like a 1 terabyte in there.
That should do.
I'm not sure with the speed. It might be a 3x4, but I don't know, maybe a 4x4. I haven't decided yet.
Well, we do all of our work, of course, real time on the machine, the rendering and the mm-hmm. and the compressor and that type of thing. But we don't store things on the machine, so you don't need a lot of storage space.
No, it just has to be fast. And as I discovered when I put this machine together, Audacity, which is our DAW, is storage bound. So when you have faster storage, it will run the compressor faster. It'll save files faster. Everything is based off of how fast the storage is. So if we can put a fast NVMe drive in here, it will be almost instantaneous, even though, you know, when we're saving, it's like we're just chatting, it doesn't really matter. But, you know, speed is speed.
That's right. Every little bit. Because, you know, The fun part is recording it. The less fun part is all done in the background.
Yeah. So the other item, I'm going to be upgrading the capture card. And the capture card is right here in the blue.
Oh, okay. So I'm grabbing this. So I'm not familiar with this one. It says 4K Pro. Oh, it's an Elgato product. That's okay.
Yeah.
That I do recognize.
So in the current podcast machine, we're using an Avermedia half-height PCI Express video capture card. And it works relatively well. It had a D-sub on it so he could catch retro video, which kind of works.
Yeah.
But I've been routing everything through HDMI. So I use an HDMI scaler for the retro PCs to get the resolution to what was supported by the capture card. And with this 4K Pro, it will capture all the way up to 4K at 60 frames a second, I believe. And it's all HDMI based, which is what I've been using. So it's like, well, might as well upgrade. This one has a PCI Express 4 interface, so it can handle a lot more data in and out, whereas the Avermedia was a 1X card, I believe.
Yeah, we should see a big jump there, too. Yep. And this is using the, I think it's still the latest, HDMI 2.1 also. So you're going to get high-speed audio and video through your HDMI, which is nice for when we're doing some of our projects.
Yeah, so that is going to be probably the most significant upgrade that I had to purchase for this machine. And since I am really planning to do a lot more streaming on Twitch for the retro PCs and, you know, I don't know, maybe we'll start broadcasting the podcast to Patreon subscribers or something like that.
There you go. Let you guys see what goes on behind the scenes.
Yep. Now, the final item is something that I wanted to call out because it's really a big deal. And it's something that a lot of people forget. Is that when you are upgrading your machine, you need to pay attention to power.
Oh, yeah. Now, we've talked about this a lot when we talk about building PCs from scratch, but we don't always talk about it when you're upgrading.
Right.
And that is this beautiful power supply. Now, this box is little, though.
Well, right. So with this small form factor case from Inwin, I believe it has a 200-watt power supply. And for the 4770K, that was fine. But now that I'm upgrading to the 13900, the Intel documentation talks about how it can pull up to 300 watts of power.
Right.
And so I'm not running a graphics card in here, but we need to have a power upgrade. And lo and behold, Silverstone sells an FXS. I think that's the form factor.
TFX.
TFX. See, I'm even wrong. The TFX form factor power supply. Silverstone offers one. And they offer three of them in different power configurations. I picked the one in the middle of the road. So this is a 500 watt. It's 80 plus gold. And it has all the power connections I need. And since it's the right form factor, I can just drop the one in the PC out and put this one in.
Now, I'm guessing this is not going to have fancy RGB either, or even be modular, probably.
Well, let's pull it out of the box and take a look.
Yeah.
I mean, this is kind of like a pseudo review of our TX 500 80 plus gold power supply.
All right, so I'm pulling it out. It is
connected cables.
Quite small, fully connected cables, all black with it looks like maybe a 60. Is that an 80?
I think that's an 80 millimeter fan.
80 millimeter fan, which we're kind of no longer used to. So it is nicely sleeved, but it is not a modular power supply, which is not a big surprise.
Nope.
And it's actually got some girth to it. It's a little heavy.
Well, that's the heat sinks to make sure that everything stays cool and quiet. The amazing thing is that this is just slightly larger than an SFX power supply. We can currently get like 1,000 watts in that form factor. So this is, I would call this kind of like an industrial form factor.
Okay.
It just happens to be put into this particular case here. So
looking at that, we don't talk a lot about power supply reviews because they're not much fun to talk about. But this is, I think, a single rail 500 watt, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, let's take a look. So you can tell by looking at the power sheet on the side. And yes, it is a single rail. We got almost 500 watts on the 12 volt rail. We got 100 watts on the 3.3 in the 5 volt rails. You know, the negative rails are the ones that are just kind of trickle power just to make sure things work. But the model number is SST-TX500-G. It's a active switching power supply. And we got standard 24-pin power connector. We got Molex. We got, looks like two PCI Express. So we could run a graphics card if we could even get one to fit in here.
Yeah, they do make some half-height ones now. We just talked about one in the main show, actually.
Yep. And we have a single CPU power connection. And I believe our mini ITX board just has one 8-pin for the CPU.
You are correct.
And then, of course, we have some SATA powers as well. Oh, and a laptop. Or not a laptop, but a floppy.
Just in case.
Well, just in case. Now, the cables are relatively long. They're not short like they are in the SFX. But being that this is an industrial design, you need to have them a little bit longer because those cases are sometimes quite large. And the reason they use a small power supply is to give you more space for electronics.
Well, I got to give them credit. Silverstone makes great products. And to see them supporting this form factor, it's going to, I think, give us all the power we need.
Yeah. And also supporting the Hardware Asylum podcast.
We appreciate that. And I cannot stress enough, you've got to have a firm foundation for your builds. And that foundation is always your power supply. Oh.
In the last segment, we were talking about the upgrades that are planned for the podcast machine, which is, you know, what records our podcast and our live streams. And basically, it's what I call the garage PC. It's just kind of a general purpose computer, super powerful and really, really small. Now, I have another project that I've been working on that's even more unique and a little smaller still.
Okay, yeah.
And it's a CyberDeck.
Yeah, so I'm familiar with the concept of a CyberDeck from like science fiction
in the,
and, you know, near future stuff.
In the, like the Neuromancer book.
So, I mean, just to make sure that we're on the same page, in popular cyberpunk literature and film, a CyberDeck is the signature deck that the hackers use to hack into the system. So everybody's CyberDeck is essentially a super customized all-in-one hacking computer.
Yeah. I mean, well, speaking of hackers,
yes,
you know, the their little laptops that they use to go and hack the Gibson, right?
I got to rewatch that.
That was, they were basically just Apple laptops, but that was their CyberDeck. They even painted them up differently and stuff like that.
So I think, In a grand scheme, right, then a CyberDeck is essentially just a highly specialized, customized, small PC?
Yep. In a sense, that's what I'm going to call it. Now, I am, well, if you look up CyberDeck and do like a Google image search, you'll see a variety of different designs that people have come up with. And some people have put them into like Pelican cases. So that they're like a ruggedized computer, and then you get there and you just pop the lid and you're like doing stuff kind of military style. And then other people have gone to the expense of 3D printing different parts and creating a crazy little laptop.
Okay, that makes sense.
There was one
super
that,
custom.
Yeah, there was one that I saw that I was really impressed with. And it was designed because this person liked to do a lot of electronics projects. And they would use the Raspberry Pi and the GPIO to do those projects. So they exposed the GPIO with, you know, those are the pins that are on the Raspberry Pi, so you can turn on LEDs and stuff like that. They exposed all of those pins across the grid that was attached to the CyberDeck. So while the Raspberry Pi was inside, you'd see the screen and the keyboard, but then you could interface directly with those pins and control other projects. It was actually kind of a neat little idea. I've been doing a lot with small form factor, single board computers. You know, the most recent one was the Pi modem, where I 3D printed a frame to go put a little Raspberry Pi inside an old retro modem. Now, when you're messing around with those, trying to get the software set up right, the amount of wires to make it work, if you actually want to interface with the board directly, you need to have, for the Pi Zeros, for instance, you need to have a USB hub, so that you can plug in a USB mouse and a USB keyboard, and in some cases, a USB network adapter, so that you can just work with the board. And then you have to have an HDMI cable come out to hook into your monitor, and then you need to have a USB cable come in so that you can power it up. And all of that is just, you know, this board is like the size of a stick of gum, but the amount of infrastructure you have to have in place, it consumes an entire desk.
Well, and I can get now, I think, why we don't see as many builds on these as you'd think is because it's a little meticulous and it's a lot small.
Yes. My cyber deck, or what I'm wanting to put together, is really more of a platform so that I can use these small form factor boards and not have all of that stuff.
So I see some boxes here. I'm intrigued.
Okay.
Let's get to it.
All right. So the big white box.
Big white box.
It says HDMI on it.
I know, but looking at it, it looks like it's about the same size as what you'd get for a 65% keyboard, but it is much lighter.
Uh-huh.
I'm opening it. Ooh, I got cables. I got a screen.
Yeah. Don't drop it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what that is that's a 10.3-inch capacitive touch LCD screen. Resolution's like 16x720. It has an HDMI interface. It has USB power and also has a USB interface for the mouse connection, which is the capacitive touch.
Yeah.
And it's in a widescreen format. So in a sense, you could have two traditional 4.3 screens side by side.
Well, I'm a little afraid I'm going to hurt this because it looks very delicate.
It's relatively tough.
No, so, that's good to know.
So I wouldn't worry about that too much. But
just don't drop it, right?
Yeah, just don't drop it. But that particular screen, I've been using that all morning as of this recording. And it's almost too small.
Almost.
Almost. But you can read the text on there, so you can actually use the Linux command line without issue. Oh, that. Oh, hold on to that. That's a little special little piece for later.
Okay. You got. Wow, there's like several of them.
But then when you get into X Windows, you can, just like on a laptop, on a Windows laptop, you can change the scaling. So you can make the fonts and the interface just a little bit larger and still have that resolution.
Okay. So what is this thing that I'm looking at here?
That is a power converter. And that goes with what is in these other boxes.
It's a DROC, it says.
DROC. In the industry, we would call it a voltage buck. But what that does is it takes 12-volt input power.
Okay, I see that.
And then converts it into 5-volt, 5-amp power. And the 5-amp is important because we need to have 5-volt power for the screen and 5-volt power for the Pi with enough amperage so that when you're running USB devices, you'll be able to run several of them without running out of power.
Okay, so now I got to look in the box.
Oh, this other box. Yeah.
Okay, making some noise, getting up.
Boom, boom, boom. All right, here, give me the screen. I'll go and pack that back up there. Oh, actually, you did it. Nice.
Okay, so I got a box of goodies. I always like boxes of goodies, as some listeners out there know.
Move that up.
I'll let Dennis put this away here. All right. The first thing I see is a couple of boxes that...
Oh, so the one that you have in your right hand right now, that's the Tangband 3-inch speaker. Now, these are not the actual speakers I'll be using in this. I mean, I wanted to have audio in my cyber deck.
So you've got a set of these.
I got a set of these. I'm going to have to get the
one
that's not as heavy.
That's surprisingly heavy.
Yeah, I misordered. So these 3-inch speakers are full range speakers, something like 100 hertz up to 20,000 hertz. So basically almost full range. The magnet is a traditional magnet and the whole thing weighs like a pound and a half.
Yeah, that's impressive for such a little speaker.
But they sell a version of that, same cone, same specs, with a neodymium magnet, and it's only a half a pound. So if I get the speaker component put together, then I'll be able to use those instead. But these speakers are for a Bluetooth speaker that will go with the CyberDeck.
Okay.
So we're going to have onboard audio.
So we're going to repurpose these and use them anyway.
Oh yeah, that will be for the desktop speaker with goes with the subwoofer.
Ah, back to the subwoofer project. So we'll get back to that eventually. All right, so I see lots of goodies in here.
Okay, so that box, that's probably the most, we're looking at a big box from Dayton Audio.
Oh wow, with giant batteries. Oh, this looks like a battery charger.
Yeah, so that is
it is a battery charger.
Yeah, it is. So Dayton Audio sells a lot of different components for building all sorts of speaker projects. This particular device here is a 12-volt output that will power amplifiers and speakers for like portable stuff. So you put a bunch of lithium batteries in there and it will run for, I don't know how long, it depends on the power draw, but it will let you charge the batteries off of that. And if you unplug the power, it's uninterruptible. So it will always drive continual power. So basically the CyberDeck will be running off of batteries all the time. I need to charge it, I'll just plug it in.
That's very nice.
But since it's a 12 volt output, that's why I have the voltage buck.
Oh yeah.
To drop the voltage down. Now, the other reason for the 12 volt power is for the other Dayton audio box that's in there, the smaller one.
Okay. So look at this one. It says it's a Bluetooth board of some sort.
Yep. It's a Bluetooth 15 watt amplifier. And okay. So
this is, oh, it's little.
Yeah. So just like the amplifiers that I purchased for the subwoofer project, this one's really similar, except that it is limited to stereo 15 watts per channel, which will be perfect for the Tang Band speakers that you just saw, but it needs to have a 14 volt input to get full output. And that's why I got the 12 volt board. It's 12, 14, it's pretty close.
Right, and I see we have a volume knob and a separate module here and a whole mess of input outputs.
Oh yeah, it's got all sorts of hookups. And there's actually another bag in there with even more cables.
I see that. And this supports Bluetooth 5.0 also, which is very nice.
Yeah, so what's kind of cool is that that power board, I can put in the CyberDeck and run the speakers, or I could take the entire thing and make my own dedicated Bluetooth speaker using these Tang Bands. And then while I'm using the CyberDeck, as long as that's on, I can just connect to it and get audio.
Super nice. And of course, we all like good sound. Mm-hmm.
Good sound, it cannot lie.
I think most everything else in here. Oh, I got a bunch of big batteries.
Oh yeah, those are the lithium cells.
Okay, look at these. Oh, these look very similar to what I have in some of my big fancy flashlights.
Oh yeah, that's what they claim that they're for. And security systems and stuff like that.
Oh yeah. Which is pretty cool. And then I've got just a whole mess of cables and some references.
Yep. Oh yeah, the how to hook them up and stuff like that. So what we're not seeing is the computer and the keyboard. So the computer, I'm probably going to use a Raspberry Pi 5 just because I can get fast storage with an NVMe drive on it, which is pretty cool. Or I might use a Zero board. I'm not quite sure. It's kind of a coin toss at this point. Raspberry Pi, Linux, relatively small. The keyboard, I'm still debating on whether or not I want to have a connected keyboard or if it's going to be a separated keyboard. And that's where this piece, which you have to use your imagination balls again because this is radio, but I 3D printed a test.
Okay.
So
it looks like a shelf bracket, kind of.
Oh, yeah. Good. Well, it's like an A, right. Really. So at the bottom, there's this chamber opening, and that is where the electronics will go. So the buckboard will go in there. There's room for the battery board. There's also room for the Pi and the amplifier. And so all that will fit in the bottom. And you'll have to imagine this is extruded out quite a ways because right now this is, what, 20 centimeters tall. And then you'll see these little cutouts on the top here, and that's where the screen will fit.
Oh, okay. I'm seeing it now. So it's gonna sit with the screen at about a 45-degree angle?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so right now it's just one piece. So the electronics are in the bottom, screen's on the top. And ultimately that's the terminal that I need to run these little Pi boards. So if I leave the bottom open, I can swap out what Pi board I want to run and then just hook it into the screen, give it power, and away I go.
Excellent. Now you mentioned the power though, or I'm sorry, you mentioned the screen was a touch screen though. So do you even need a keyboard?
No. And that's the other beauty of it. So it's like if I haul this around and say, I want to play some music out in the garage, right? I mean, I could use the podcast machine, but I don't have speakers hooked up to it. So that's where the Bluetooth speakers will come into play. And if I run this guy, I can just basically fire up a music interface, nice big buttons, and I can just play, skip, or whatever I want. And then I can just use the touch interface. And if I need to hook in a keyboard, I could use a Bluetooth keyboard, or this little shelf here at the top, I'm going to be putting a USB hub, a little powered hub.
Oh, yeah?
So I'll have four USB ports coming out the back, three or four. I can't It depends on which hub I use. That will expand how many USB ports I have on the Raspberry Pi, but it also will give me connectivity so I can plug in drives and mice and stuff like that to get more functionality out of this device.
So even more versatility in the long run. I like it. It's an interesting project to me. I guess if I were a listener, I think I'd be going, what do I need this to do for me, though?
Yeah, well, and that's the biggest challenge, right? Because a lot of these people that build these CyberDecks, they talk about how it's really fun to build it, but they never actually use it.
Interesting.
And for me, I just wanted it so that when I'm using these Pi boards and running programs on them, because, you know, for various other projects, I don't want to have this big mess of cables and wires all over the place. I want to be able to just turn it on and be able to use it. And this is what that will give me. So that way I can swap out the Pi board in the bottom. If I wanted to run a Raspberry Pi 5, or if I want to run a Zero or something like that, I can just plug it in. It has the same power requirements. You just hook up the USB power and away you go.
Well, looking forward to seeing more about this project. I know you're planning on doing not just some articles, but some video as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I wanted to do obviously an article of the entire build process, some videos of the 3D printing part, and then kind of the assembly. And I'm not sure if I want to do, because right now this is separate. This is just screen and computer. That's the 3D printer part. The Bluetooth speaker part of it, I mean, these speakers are pretty big, but I wanted pretty good audio out of it.
Yeah.
That could be its own little standalone unit. It doesn't have to be part of this, but one of the driving principles of the CyberDeck is that it has everything you need and it's portable.
Okay. So yeah, so it makes sense that it would be modular maybe, but it should be one component at its core.
Yeah. So that way I can kind of connect them together if I wanted to haul it around. And that also has power implications because right now the battery board was designed to run the amplifier and then step the power down to run everything else because the screen is 5 volts and the Pis are 5 volts. Now, if I have it as a separate power or a separate Bluetooth, the power needs to be with the Bluetooth piece. So then how do I power the Pi and the screen? So that will...
Interesting, yeah.
I have some challenges to overcome. And maybe it just gets all printed together. I don't really know. But I'm excited to see how this will evolve. And if you have any questions or comments, please send us an email and I will answer them as best I can. For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS or subscribe to us on YouTube. This has been an Engine Lane production, copyright 2025. Thanks for listening.